Hi everyone, Nora here. I just wanted to hop on before the episode to say a couple of quick things. First, I'd again like to apologize for the quality of my audio throughout this episode. Kevin and I are looking for solutions moving forward to make sure we can present you the best quality of audio possible. Secondly, it's going to be a long episode. Kevin and I just have so much to say and so much to share that condensing it down into about an hour is very difficult. Lastly, we'd like to give some content warning before moving forward with this episode. This episode contains mentions of cults, incest, sexual assault, rape, murder, and miscarriages. Thank you all so much for your support and enjoy the episode. Hi, and welcome to Useless, a podcast where we take the world's most random and useless knowledge and absorb as much information as possible. I'm Nora Noble.
And I'm Kevin Baumgartner. Each week we pick a different topic and explain it to you.
Together, we are a font of useless information that only does us good at parties or mixers.
Now, we're not experts of any kind, least of all in our own fields of work and study. So like you always should with strangers on the internet, take everything we say with a grain of salt.
And hey, maybe one day you can be useless too.
I'm Kevin Baumgartner, and I'm going to be Steve Harvey's next replacement.
Well, I'm Nora Noble, and I'm a semi-professional cat herder.
Would you like to explain why you picked the name Family Freud today?
Today's episode is Family Freud because I'm going to be talking about the Borgia family, and Kevin is going to be talking about the good old Duggar family.
Honestly, the Freud part came from, I know Freud has a lot to do with just like gross psychology, but both of these families, from what I know nothing about the Borgias, but they all need a lot of psychological help. Duggars are not great.
The Borgias are interesting. It's mostly the second son of the family that's just fucking
nuts. He's just living life.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Nora, Are the Borgias going to be as distressing as last week?
Probably not. I feel like you're going to find them more interesting than distressing.
Okay. That's what I was going to ask. Because dolphins, maybe I overreacted, but we haven't gotten all of the little 5-star reviews yet. But dolphins were extremely distressing last week. So I'm excited to hear something that just makes me go, huh, that's weird. Before we start each one, I think we both like to talk about what we know as a baseline.
Yes.
I know absolutely nothing. I thought the Borgias, when we call this one Family Freud, and you said, oh yeah, the Borgias had a lot to do with Christianity. I thought the Borgias were like the Duggars and were a TV family. I just now found out that one of the Borgias was dating Da Vinci. You said that one of them was dating Da Vinci, and that's who, I'm not going to spoil it because that's a fun little tidbit that I actually learned separately through a TikTok and then didn't put together that it was the same thing. We'll get there. But that's really all I know is that apparently they're an Italian family. It had something to do with the Bible, and I thought they were reality stars, but they were in like the 1500s or something. That's it.
Okay. Are you ready to get into it? So my first interaction with the Borgia family was Assassin's Creed Brotherhood.
Of course.
Because it's the Ezio trilogy, so it takes place in Italy around the Renaissance. But I learned about the Borgias originally from Assassin's Creed because they're set in different time periods and everything. And so they use historical figures to, you know, like thicken the plot, make it more real and exciting and everything. But some background on the Borgia family itself, they're not Italian, even though they lived in Rome. They are Spanish and Aragonese noble family, and they rose to prominence during the Italian Renaissance. They became prominent in ecclesiastical, so church stuff, and political affairs in the 15th and 16th centuries because they had two popes almost back to back. They had Alphonse de Borgia, who was Pope Calixtus, I can't say that right, the third. So the next Borgia pope was Rodrigo Borgia, who was Pope Alexander the sixth.
How do they pick their name? Can I be like Pope Vanessa?
So no, it needs to have some biblical or theological importance when you choose your, whenever you choose your Pope name, there has to be a Catholic Christian importance to it. You can't just be like, I'm going to be
Pope Jessica.
James Paul the 14th.
Like, James Paul.
you have to choose like an actual name of importance.
I always forget that you're a recovering Catholic kid.
Yep.
Or a recovering Catholic school kid.
Yeah, that was gonna say, I was never Catholic, but I went to Catholic school. Gosh. So the Pope, the Borgia family had two popes. They had Alphonse de Borgia, and then they had Rodrigo Borgia. So the one that I'm going to focus more on is the second one, Rodrigo. Alphonse was his uncle, so they tried to keep it in the family. But Alphonse was Pope from 1455 to 1458. Rodrigo was then 1492 to 1503. So they're
pretty close.
Yeah, they're pretty close. Well, like, yeah, it was his uncle. There were, I want to say there were two popes in between.
Damn, popes didn't last long back then.
But anyway, but the family rose to prominence because they had a lot of enemies. And so we're still trying to figure out what is rumor and what is true about them, about the Borgia family, because there's a lot of shit here. During the reign of Alexander VI, the family were suspected of a lot of crimes, and some of them they just came straight out on. But what they were suspected of was adultery, incest, simony. Ooh. And that simony is when you sell like pardons to people. So somebody goes, Pope, I did a crime, can you give me a pardon? And the Pope would be like, yeah, if you give me money. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Yeah, very much tithes.
Yes. Theft, bribery, and murder.
Oh.
Specifically, a lot of murders that are attributed to this family either happened through arsenic poisoning or strangling / drowning.
Well, that's not very Christian of them.
Nope. But because they were a family that was constantly like looking for more power. So if you think like Game of Thrones and the Lannister family, they had a lot of enemies. Some of these names might sound familiar. They were enemies with the Medici family and the Sforza family, who were very prominent in Italy, as well as several Dominican friars.
What?
Among them being, oh my gosh, I don't know how to say his name, Girolamo Savonarola.
Oh, this is going to be the Nora pronounces Italian badly.
It's going to be a bad time. I'm so sorry. I got Sforza right.
Yeah, you did, probably. I can't vet that, but sure.
So my second introduction to the Borgia family was there was a Showtime series that ran from like 2011 to 2013. Then it was on Netflix, and I watched it all in like 2 days and just like was enamored by it because it was weird. And I love historical dramas. But so I like a lot of the names that I'm pronouncing in this is from me watching that. So like I can say Medici and Sforza because I watched the show, so I know how they're supposed to be pronounced, or at least how they were pronounced in that. But despite their many crimes, actual and supposed, they were also apparently like great patrons of the arts, especially Leonardo da Vinci and the second son Cesare Borgia were good friends to such a point that it was rumored they were lovers.
Oh, they were really good friends. They just never married anyone else, and they lived together because they were such good friends. And
so, but there's not a lot to support that theory from what I found. I think it's just a lot of people nowadays being like, and they were patron and artist instead of they were roommates.
And they were art. Patrons of the arts.
Well, Cesare was the patron, Leonardo would be the artist. Forget top and bottom, we're doing patron and artist.
Girls, ladies, do you like your man to be a patron or the art?
Yes. But
wait, I don't mean to back up, but did it say the crimes?
Mm-hmm.
Which ones did they fess up to and which ones were supposed?
Was you'll find out in a second.
Okay, because I was like, did they just say, yeah, I murdered, like, Avatar Kyoshi, yeah, I murdered him. What about him?
No, you'll find out here. But because they were such patrons of the arts, they contributed significantly to the Italian Renaissance, despite not technically being Italian themselves.
Oh.
It is suspected because they had a lot of enemies, especially powerful ones. And there's this kind of one-dimensional view of the family as a whole. Historians and scholars are not quite sure, you know, like the critique of the family, how much has lasted from their contemporaries and how much of it is true. So that's why we're still trying to figure out, like, what did they actually do?
Right.
One of the things that they are often critiqued from, because if you couldn't guess, the Renaissance was also fairly anti-Semitic. Often critiqued of coming from Jewish origins and were referred, And were often referred to as what's called Marranos. So this is people that were in the like Iberian Peninsula, so Spain, Portugal, that were forced to convert to Christianity. But despite their forced conversion, they would still practice Judaism in secret. And so political opponents to undermine this family would call them Marranos. I'm sorry, what'd you say, Kevin?
This is just the church, anti-church episode part two, because I've not heard it. We need to have a redemption arc for the church or something.
But despite, you know, political opponents trying to undermine them with this, it didn't really work, obviously.
Did they like, was that supposed to be like a damning thing? Like, I assume
because literally two of them were popes.
Oh, I didn't even put that together. Holy shit. How did I not put that together? We talked about them being popes at length.
Oh, yeah. So the spread of Christianity like that. Being Jewish was considered like...
gag.
Yeah, so being Jewish was seen as like this awful thing.
It was still like, obviously, like, they've been oppressed for a while, but like, if like even being Jewish was a bad thing. Obviously, it's a really bad thing to be called Jewish if you're the Pope. And it's not, I don't know if that has to do with the fact that it's Jewish or just like the fact that it's not Catholic.
So, despite being called Marranos, but the family themselves propagated that their origins are not Jewish, but that they actually descend from a 12th century claimant to the crown for Aragon, the kingdom of Aragon, Lord Borgia, but that man died childless. So everyone's like, how are you a descendant from him if he had no kids?
Oh, wait, I'm just either a bad listener or stupid, because like you keep saying things and I'm like, aw. And then you're like, wait, no, not aw. That doesn't make sense.
No.
Aw.
So
how convenient is that?
Yes.
Interesting.
So like I said earlier, the more interesting of the two popes from this family is Rodrigo, who is Pope Alexander VI. So I might refer to him either, or I'm going to try to keep it consistent as Rodrigo. But he was made a cardinal by his uncle, who was the Pope before him, Alphonse, and then later became the Pope himself. While he was a cardinal, however, this is where it starts getting a little spicy, he maintained a long-term affair with, her name was Venosa de Carignani, but her first name is Venosa, and they had four children together.
Okay.
Giovanni, which is a name that's going to pop up a lot. Cesare, who is probably the most known, Lucrezia, and Geoffrey.
Well, sorry, quick question I need from your Catholic brain. I think this is relevant, like I'm not going off topic. So cardinals to the Pope is like the exec board to the president, or like the cabinet to the president?
Yes.
Like lower, they're kind of like a supporting little guys.
Yeah, so we have the Pope, we have the cardinals, and then there are archbishops, bishops, priests, deacons, laymen, I believe is the simple layout.
The international at the top to like the local church.
Yes.
Question number two, are cardinals supposed to be celibate, like obviously
priest
like,
and up? Yes.
So cardinal, so this was a big deal that he had four. He wasn't only uncelibate, he was so uncelibate he at least four times.
So the thing is about this time in history is that clergymen of all sorts, priest and up, were supposed to be celibate.
Yeah, they weren't even supposed to be married, right?
No Okay. Like they couldn't be married because in terms of priesthood, you are married to the church. So none of them are supposed to have children. None of them are supposed to have titles of any kind, you know, all of that.
Yeah.
However, it was fairly common for priests and up to have illegitimate children. So he had four children and then he had at least one other daughter while Pope with a mistress.
Whoa, wait, the Pope fucks? Hell yeah.
Oh yeah, the Pope fucked. Oh, it gets spicier. This is just like the tip of the spice.
Okay.
So Rodrigo is like, I don't want to say it's fact, but like everyone kind of agreed he's a very skilled politician and a diplomat. However, people fucking hated him. And for good reason. He's overspent church funds. He did sale of church offices, which is pardons, you know, like, hey, I did a bad thing. Give me money and whatever. Lasciviousness and nepotism, which will really pop out in a second. He only had his sights set on personal and papal power and wealth. So the main reason he kind of became the Pope was like, well, now I'm the most, like, one of the most powerful people in the world. He was also the first Pope ever to openly recognize all of his children, all of whom were born out of wedlock.
Progressive!
As the Pope, he was like, fuck. Okay, so here's the deal. I have kids.
What are you gonna do about it?
Literally
tell God on me?
Yeah. Literally people were like, what the fuck do we do with this information? Like the
Because you can't overthrow the Pope.
Especially because like, the Pope, like, once you become Pope, you're supposed to be infallible. Like you are the voice of God on earth. Like you are
literally
you are the personification of the church. Anything you say is like biblical law, essentially. And this man was just like, hey, so I have children.
Do something about it. Yeah. You gotta call God. I got him on speed dial.
But he was so focused on personal power and wealth that he also managed to like gain this wealth and stuff through his children, especially now that he had recognized them, because everyone was like, oh my God, I could marry the Pope's fucking son. So Giovanni, his oldest, got married into Spanish royalty after being made the captain general of the papal army. So he was essentially, not only was he like now married into Spanish royalty, he was in charge of the papal army. And then his second son, Cesare, who is kind of also rumored to be his favorite son, who he literally groomed from birth for life in the church, made him into a cardinal. But he made him into a bishop when he was 15, an archbishop when he was 17, and then he became a cardinal later. Lucrezia got married to Giovanni Sforza, who is another powerful family in Europe. I said the name earlier. They were enemies, but this was to kind of like consolidate their power because the Sforza family was like, okay, you beat us, you're the Pope. Like we literally can't like outmaneuver you at this point. Yeah. And then the youngest of the four with Venosa, Joffrey, he got married to Sancha of Aragon, who was like essentially the princess of Aragon in Naples. And now for something a little spicy, very spicy actually.
Sorry, this wasn't spicy enough? I'm like fully locked in that this is the Kardashians.
The only thing I wrote on my notes here, because I remember learning about this and I also remember watching it on the show, it's called The Banquet of Chestnuts.
Okay.
And essentially what it is.
Oh, God.
It was hosted by Cesare.
Okay.
That thing has been determined that is factual. It was not the Pope who did this. It did, however, take place the papal home.
So, like, the Pope had to be okay with it.
The Pope was there by some accounts. So was Lucrezia.
Okay.
And it was just a giant fucking orgy. Cesare hired 50 courtesans, and they dined and danced with guests as like normal, you know, just like normal attendance to a ball or whatever. And then eventually just like started getting naked. But he hired 50 courtesans to come to this banquet, dance and entertain guests, and then they all started getting naked, and it turned into a giant fucking orgy. And at some point, why it is called the Banquet of Chestnuts, I guess, is because at some point they threw a bunch of chestnuts on the ground, and the prostitutes, while naked, had to, like, find ways to pick them up.
What do you mean, find ways to pick them up?
I'm not going to elaborate on that, but there were also prizes at this banquet for whoever could have the most sex.
What?! This was held at the Vatican.
Yeah, they would hand out like silk tunics and like new boots and stuff like that to whoever could have the most sex.
At the Vatican.
Yeah, no. So Banquet of Chestnuts was an infamous thing. We have at least one first person account from it. Somebody wrote it down in their diary, but it was also somebody who didn't really like the Borgias. So we also aren't 100% sure how much of it is exaggerated, but we do know it was hosted by Cesare and there were at least 50 courtesans there. What is mostly disputed is whether the Pope and Lucrezia were also there. That's kind of it for Rodrigo.
Oh, that's it. Nothing else?
Oh, he'll pop up here and there. He died in 1503. I'm going to skip over Cesare because I have a lot for him, so I'll come back to him. And I'm going to skip over to Lucrezia. I'm fascinated by her because there's a lot of debate in scholarly circles whether she was a victim or a participant.
Oh.
Was she actively going along and making plans with them, or did she just have to as a woman in a powerful male-dominated family?
Oh, these are always so interesting. Sad lots of times, but interesting.
Yes, but a lot of allegations that have also rose, like I said earlier, are incest and poisoning and murder, especially on her part. However, there's not a lot of historical basis for some of these rumors, so we don't know really. The thing with incest is it is rumored that she and Cesare were involved with each other, that they loved each other. It was rumored because we don't know, we've never found it, that she had possession of a hollow ring So like a ring that just was hollow that she would use to poison people.
That's badass.
And I also really like this about her, and I feel like this is kind of a point. It's also shown in the TV show, and I really liked kind of how they did that, because Lucrezia was very, very young, but at some point she stood in for her father, the Pope, Alexander VI, at an official Vatican meeting. So she essentially acted as the Pope, but apparently she like took charge of it, and there's a painting. It was a 20th century painting, but he painted her with literally one of the like cardinals kissing her feet.
So there are
rumors that suggest that like she handled it like a fucking boss.
How old was she?
I don't know how old she was. I would say she was like maybe 16 or 17 at that point.
That's even cooler.
Oh, but her life was also spicy. Before she was 13, she had been engaged twice, both times to Spanish princes. When she was 13, she was married to Giovanni Sforza, thanks to her papa. Apparently they didn't have any children that I saw, and once the Pope was done with the Sforzas, because again he consolidated a lot of his power through his children, it was annulled 4 years later because the Pope didn't need the Sforzas anymore, and he said that the marriage was never consummated, so they never had sex, which, thank God, because she was fucking 13, and she only would have been 17 by the time they divorced. But there are rumors that say otherwise, but the Pope was like, nope, I'm the Pope. It's annulled. You guys didn't have sex. But she was very accomplished, and for a woman in the Renaissance, her education, unlike others where you'd mostly get it from like a convent from nuns, she got it from like family members and like other powerful women in her life, and like a trusted friend of her father's who was, I forget her teacher's name, but she was also considered like her father's favorite. The Pope loved his daughter, and I will give him Papa points for that. But that didn't stop him from, you know, using her to his advantage, but she was fluent in Spanish, Catalan, Italian, and French, and she had been prepared for advantageous marriages literally from like childbirth. Like the Pope was like, I'm gonna have her marry someone powerful, and so like she was groomed to be like the perfect princess. She's literate in both Latin and Greek. She was proficient in the lute, in poetry and oration, and the biggest testament to her intelligence is that she was capable in administration. Like she took care of Vatican correspondence and governance, and then took care of governance in the province of Ferrara. So she ended up being married in total 3 times, but it was also alleged that she had a relationship, if not an affair, with a Spaniard whose name was Pedro, and then who later was found along with one of her like ladies in waiting killed, like in the Tiber River. He was found, as well as one of her ladies in waiting, they were found dead in the Tiber, and there is a lot of speculation that Cesare was the one that, if not killed him himself, had him killed. Because, well, some of it is, again, speculation that it was out of jealousy, that Cesare was like, no, you're mine. But that's not fully substantiated as well. But it also would have ruined negotiations that were happening at the time for another advantageous marriage for her. So this was after she had been divorced from Giovanni Sforza, that she found this man. But here's Giovanni number 3. I told you the name is going to pop up a lot. It is also rumored that Lucrezia is the mother of Giovanni Borgia, and this child had like a specific name, and it's like the Child of Rome, I think, is what his like title is, and he's named after his older brother. Either way you look at it, the original Giovanni Borgia is his brother somehow, if not his uncle. People are certain, like we're pretty sure, regardless of what the Pope says, Lucrezia is the mother. However, the father is unclear. Some people say it's Pedro. Some people say it's Cesare. Okay. And then even the Pope might have been the dad, whether it was Lucrezia as the mom or not, because he did claim ownership of the child.
I want to just go through the family tree real quick, just because there's a lot of names. We have the Pope.
Rodrigo.
Whose name is Rodrigo. Then we have the kids, and it's Lucrezia, Giovanni, and
Cesare and Geoffrey.
Lucrezia had a child named Giovanni. Yes. And it's either the boy who's dead in the river.
Yes.
Her brother or her dad.
Yep.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure I was on the same page, make sure everyone else was on the same page, because
I'm on the side of it, just like looking at the timeline of things, that it's Pedro, that it's, you know, the man she was having a fucking affair with. However, The Pope may have made the situation just so much more worse because he declared, they're called papal bulls, B-U-L-L-S, okay. And it's just like a proclamation, declared two different dads for this child on the same day.
Gay rights.
First saying that Cesare was the son by, or was the dad by an unnamed unmarried woman.
Or
he followed it up. Like, so soon after, literally same day, that no, it's his boy. The Pope said, it's my son, but I don't want to legally claim him, because if he claimed him legally at that point, he would have gotten no inheritance. Like, the child would have gotten nothing. We're pretty sure that this Giovanni, the child of Rome, or whatever he was called, is at least Rodrigo's grandson. We're pretty sure. Like, whatever fucking bullshit he wants to pull and be like, I have to take the blame off my daughter because, one, she's my daughter, and two, how can I marry her off if everyone thinks she's, you know, unmarried and had a child out of wedlock? That's just going to ruin everything. And from what I understand and what scholars and historians believe is that Cesare did try to step up to be, like, a father. To like, take the blame and be like, yes, this is my son. I'm going to, like, whether he's lying or not, he was going to do that. So I guess he gets at least one good brother point for that if it's Lucrezia's child. And he was like, I will take the blame so my sister doesn't get, like, burned at the fucking stake.
Or
he was actually the dad, which is awful, and I don't want to think about it. But because of the unofficial nature of this child's origin that no one could pin down, he bounced around quite a bit. He mostly stayed with Lucrezia, but they didn't want him, especially when he was so young, to be around her so much, because then it confirmed that she would be the mom, you know? So they're like, we had to keep it seem more like a sibling relationship and less like a mother-son relationship. But one of my favorite things is that the Pope excommunicated a couple of people. Just so that the young Giovanni could inherit the Duchy of Nepi. He excommunicated people so his grandson could become a duke. So little Giovanni, as I'm going to call him, little Gio. he stayed mostly with Lucrezia wherever she went, and she claimed, keeping up family appearances, that he was just a much younger half-brother and not her son, but, you know, everyone's pretty sure he's her son. So then Lucrezia's second husband was the Prince of Naples, Alfonso of Aragon. This is, I think, also like the third Alfonso or the second Alfonso. There will be at least one more. Her second husband, Alfonso, died, and we know this one, directly because of Cesare.
Oh!
But it wasn't out of jealousy or anything. It wasn't like the whole Pedro situation. So Cesare at the time was working essentially as like a mercenary captain for France. He was like lead of their, you know, hired armies. He tried to kill him. He wanted to kill him because he wanted to break Naples. Her husband was the king, or was the prince of Naples, and his dad was, you know, the ruler of Naples. So Cesare was like, sweet, I'm just going to go after your son if you're not going to give me what you want. Or what I want.
Of course.
He tried to kill him once, failed, but succeeded the second time, strangled him.
Oh, okay.
And great. The third and final husband was Alfonso de Este. He was the Duke of Ferrara, and he lived as far as we know. He was not killed by Cesare. After her father died, she kind of was able to live more freely because there was no longer like that political maneuvering of being the Pope's daughter. She was able to live freely with Alfonso and her children. She did name one of her kids Rodrigo. That was, I think, her first son, official son. Though she did lose several of her children shortly after birth. One of them lived to be about two and then passed away. She herself died after the death of her last baby, who had only been 10 days prior. So her baby was born, died, and then she died 10 days after the birth. Five or six, if you count Giovanni, of her seven or eight children lived to adulthood.
God.
So more than half. Like I said earlier, it was rumored that she was like a notorious poisoner and was skillful in political intrigue. A lot of people liked her. There's a lot of different paintings that are attributed to her likeness because she was, you know, described as like the perfect Renaissance woman. You know, she had like a round childlike face. She was very beautiful. She had very long blonde hair that was curly. Like, she was slight of frame, and she was graceful and articulate, so, like, she was the perfect Renaissance woman. People loved her. But we're still unclear at times whether she was a victim or a participant in, like, the political intrigue of everything. That's mostly Lucrezia's stuff, so it's not a lot, and unfortunately, a lot of it revolves around men, but, you know, being a woman in Renaissance Italy, especially when you're defined by your father being the Pope. It's kind of hard not to have a story. Yeah. Okay, so on to who is probably the more noteworthy child of the Borgias, Cesare, who is just...
Okay.
The wild child. He is the second born of Rodrigo. He is the second son. And like I said earlier, Rodrigo groomed Cesare pretty much to perfection for life in the church. Like, he was a bishop at 15, archbishop at 17, and eventually became a cardinal. However, that's not what Cesare wanted. And it is rumored that he killed his older brother Giovanni so he could take his place as the oldest son.
Okay, Game of Thrones, yeah. Go off.
This is often disputed because, you know, the Borgias had a lot of enemies, but it makes sense also that Cesare would be the one to kill him, or at least have him killed. Again, there's a lot of speculation of, did Cesare kill him just like outright, or did he have someone kill him, or was he even involved?
I feel like with the amount of money and influence they have, it would just be a lot cleaner to have someone else do it.
Well, yeah. And a lot of what we see from Cesare, though, like, eventually Leonardo stopped being his friend because Cesare had such a bloodlust.
Oh, so he was a very much direct
action. Kind of. Cesare was wild. He was described as, like, beloved by the people. They loved him. They saw him as a better ruler than, you know, the people that were there before him. But a lot of he would swing between just like a mad genius into like absolute sloth. He would swing from extremes. And like, even his closest friends were kind of like, we don't know what's going on. But the people, like the common people, loved him, which made like when other people wanted to like overthrow him or undermine him, made it harder because the people loved him.
Because people in the political sphere hate him, but when the people love you, it's like, whoever kills me, you're going to have Queen Marie Antoinette on your hands, situation on your hands. People are going to chop your head off. Like,
but for a while, like, Leonardo loved him because it was his patron, and Leonardo could go pretty much wherever he wanted. Cesare hired Leonardo, like, was his patron, chief engineer of, like, war. So, like, if they had to get over rivers or find better ways to work cannons and like any of that shit, or architect any kind of building they had to do for like fortresses and stuff, Leonardo was like the head of that. But anyway, Giovanni dying allowed Cesare to have a military career instead of a religious one. And another reason why Cesare may have wanted to kill Giovanni, and I feel really bad for the youngest son here, is because he may have killed Giovanni out of jealousy, because they were both having an affair with their younger brother's wife.
That's as messy is as messy.
Her name was Sancha, and apparently they were both having an affair with her.
Messy.
While she was married to their younger brother.
Right.
But because of this, because of his brother's death and him being able to do a military career, he was the first ever cardinal to leave the church. Like, he was the first cardinal to be like, peace, bye. But he was the first one to leave the Holy Order. But he received all the benefits then of being the oldest son and became a, like, prominent mercenary commander. There's a word for it. I couldn't pronounce it. And it was said a lot, so I'm just going to not worry about it. Mercenary is, like, the closest translation. But he became like a mercenary commander for the King of France, which is why he wanted to kill Lucrezia's second husband, because they wanted to take over Naples. The King of France named him Duke Valentinois, which also earned Cesare his nickname Valentino, because he became like a military commander. He also took over the papal army for a little bit for his dead brother. He wanted to establish his own principality in central Italy. So at this point in history, Italy is not like one whole unified nation. It's mostly kind of like separate city states agreeing to be cool with each other. Yeah. So what Cesare wanted to do was establish his own principality in northern and central Italy. And obviously his father was all for it. He was like, yes, consolidate the power, especially because like then that's loyal to me and hashtag the church. And so he had the backing of the French king. He was a mercenary captain. He also had the backing of the Pope. And remember earlier when you were like, they never got married and like they just like lived their own lives and whatever, like between Leonardo and Cesare. Cesare managed to marry the Princess of France.
Oh.
He married Charlotte d'Albert. I think that's how you say that. her name's Charlotte, and they had a daughter together. And I guess from just kind of what we know, he was a fairly doting father, but he had one legitimate daughter. Would you like to know how many illegitimate children he had?
Hit me.
11. But he ruled his portion of Italy, his principality, for quite a bit. Well, I shouldn't say for quite a bit. It was a few years. And it was seen as an improvement from the vicars that were there before the people. Like the people were like, oh my God, this guy is so much better. And from historical records, like he was loved by the people and like he did good by them.
Oh, good for
him. He was always very like kind and courteous and like wanted to know like the current fashions and like sports and stuff with them and like yeah.
The Borgias are kind of cool.
Yeah. So like he was kind of a man of the people. Like I don't know how much of that might have been genuine, where he was like, we gotta take care of like the people who are in charge, or how much of that was him being like, I'm a lot harder to unseat if people like me.
Mm-hmm. And also like, if people like me, I have power.
Yeah. Yeah. So he was very popular. But he ended up becoming so powerful that even after his father died in 1503, he influenced the decision of who the next pope would be. But also, real quick, before we jump past it, his father, Rodrigo, apparently commissioned Da Vinci. This was a little harder to pin down and find, and I ended up, you know, on that skeezy, definitely a cult website. I went down some rabbit holes trying to find a better, more substantial claim for this, but apparently Rodrigo may or may not have commissioned Da Vinci to repaint Jesus in the likeness of his son Cesare, and also in that same vein, paint Lucrezia in the image of Mary, Mother of God.
So, would you like to continue on the historical significance of that painting?
Yes, because regardless, Da Vinci is the reason why we have white Jesus.
This is the fact that I was talking about at the beginning that I found out on TikTok, and I was like, oh, that's interesting. And Nora's like, it's the Borgias.
It is. It's the Borgias. It's Cesare Borgia. We're pretty sure because the portraits we have of him match the portraits of Jesus made around this time. Because once Da Vinci kind of pushed his, and he was also a big part of this new version of Jesus being pushed out, more and more painters and renditions of Jesus began to take on the likeness and image of Da Vinci's, which is Cesare. Anyway, there's not a lot to substantiate that Cesare and Leonardo were lovers, but historically, Da Vinci was probably a little gay. If nothing else, they were very good friends, or they at least had a very good patron and artisan relationship, because like Da Vinci could literally pretty much just go wherever he wanted. And anything he did, Cesare was like, this is amazing, show-stopping, iconic, never seen before. And, like, Da Vinci did a bunch of maps for them, did different, like, architect things for them, for Cesare and his band of men and the army. But they may have been lovers, but either way, they are the reason why we have white Jesus. To get back on track, Cesare became so powerful that he could influence who the next pope would be after his dad died in 1503. So to increase his chances and to hold on to his principality that he had made and that he wanted to keep expanding, because eventually he was just like, fuck it, I'm just going to take over all of Italy. Is that cool? He relied so heavily on papal backing. Like, he was so confident because like his dad was the pope and he had the pope's blessing to do this. Mm-hmm. So whoever the next pope was going to be, he had to, you know, try to ensure and make sure that man was also going to back him up. And he succeeded. He got the pope he wanted to become pope, Pius III. However, Pius died within a month. He was pope for 26 days. So he only had that pope for like a little while.
Good for him.
But Cesare's principality started because Rodrigo was like, oh, I could also profit off of this if my son is taking over places where I don't like the who's ever in charge there. So he also deposed of the leaders of Marche, M-A-R-C-H-E. I think that's pronounced Marche or March. I just could be idiot. And Romagna. The theory was that they would subject directly to the Pope. Like the rulers of these states would subject to the Pope because of Cesare. So Cesare took powers of these areas and like the people were like, this is great. This is so much better. And the Pope was like, this is wonderful. But throughout his time as well, because Cesare, like I said, was only a leader of these areas for just like a few years, really. He was betrayed several times because he was just like a firecracker of a man. First that popped up while I was doing my research was by some of the commanders that were under him. So these men were also like mercenary captains, and he ended up being their captain. And he considered them like, you know, friends, but they betrayed him, some of them. And he was like, that sucks. And the reason they betrayed him is because they're like, he's getting a little too feisty about war. He seems a little too much into the bloodlust. This is also around the time Leonardo was like, I don't think I'm comfortable with this anymore. But Cesare was like, cool, that's fine, that's cool, whatever. Betray me, that's real casual.
Whatever, it's fine.
And he called for like a meeting with them to like bring them back, I guess, or like being like, you know, I forgive your betrayal, you know, trying to like make an alliance again or whatever. He called like a parley, essentially. The second they stepped into his chambers, he had them imprisoned and strangled.
Oh, okay.
He was again betrayed by another man that he considered his ally. And unfortunately, he was captured. I shouldn't say unfortunately. Cesare was like captured and was passed around several different prisons in Europe for a little while. Eventually, he escaped and became a military commander again, but this time for King John III of Navarre, which is like Spain. But he was a good leader from all report. But after his Pope Pius III died, he was forced to support someone who had been like a staunch rival of his for a very long time, Giuliano della Rovere. They had been enemies for a really long time, but he knew he wouldn't get the papacy if he didn't have Cesare's backing, because Cesare was still very powerful and could still influence these decisions. Mm-hmm. And so he promised Cesare all his support and that he could keep his titles and his honors, and, you know, could hold on to his principality and everything. And spoiler, he lied.
Huh.
So Cesare lived out the rest of his life being a military commander for King John III of Navarre. He died in 1507, just 4 years after his father, because he relied so heavily on that papal backing, and then he didn't have it anymore, and he was like, fuck.
Fuck.
But he died while trying to besiege Viana Castle in Spain. He tried a surprise attack. It failed. He chased after some knights that were leaving the castle, assumably to go get help for the people being besieged. Cesare saw them, took after them, didn't realize that nobody followed him. The knights did, ambushed him, killed him, and left him stripped naked in the woods dying. At this point, also, he was wearing, like, a mask on his face, like a partial leather mask, like it only covered part of his face. And they think it's because of disfigurement from syphilis. So there's also a chance he was going mad, like, just, like, legitimately crazy at this point, because syphilis will, you know, mess with your brain. So that could also explain. But they did leave him, like, a red tile to cover his penis with. So he died naked, but at least his bits were covered.
A red
tile? Yeah, that's what it said, a red tile to cover his genitalia.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but that is everything I have on my Google Doc.
Oh, wait, is that it?
Hour and a half, it's a lot of info.
It's a lot of info, but it was so interesting. I need a snack, so let's go to the ad and recommendation corner.
Yeah, I don't have anything clever to say this week, sure.
Kevin, you smell so good.
Thanks. I'm just glad that you noticed. From Virginia, through the computer screen.
Of course. I'd recognize that Terabusi Creek smell from anywhere, even from 484 miles away and through a computer screen.
Well, today, everyone, we want to tell you, our listeners and beautiful best friends, about Terabusi Creek. They're a small batch, handcrafted, homemade business that specializes in creating plant-based formulas to enrich your skincare and self-care routines.
They have products ranging from candles to facial care to bubble bars, even to monthly boxes. And with restocks happening every other Friday, you never have to go too long without your favorite smells. Kevin and I each have a few different products that we absolutely adore.
When Nora and I started this podcast, we had both agreed to never take a sponsorship from a product we don't love or a company who has shady values. So believe us when we tell you that we love Terabusi Creek. They're cruelty-free, vegan, and have strong stances on various current social justice issues like Black Lives Matter and LGBTQ rights.
My current obsession is a dreamy soap bar with lavender, sweetgrass, and a hint of moonbeams. Made with ingredients like shea butter and olive oil, my skin is feeling fine and fresh.
As a skincare connoisseur myself, the Backwood face mask with charcoal, kaolin clay, and tea tree oil leaves my oily little greasy face feeling fresh and ready to take on the world.
And his haters. Support small businesses and your favorite podcast by enriching your skincare routine by visiting terabuseycreek.com and using the code USELESS10 at checkout to receive 10% off your entire order.
That is terabuseycreek.com, TARABUSICREEK.com with code USELESS10, and you'll receive 10% off your entire order.
And hey, with Terabuse Creek, you can smell useless too.
If you guys are new to here, this is our recommendation corner where we like to give a little shout out on things we've been doing the past since the last time we recorded. I've said that because, you know, times vary between recording times. But, you know, just things that we want to recommend, small businesses or large businesses or extremely useless trends.
Or just things to do.
Yeah, whatever. You'll see. Nora, do you want to go first?
I love going first. This is why my waveform is on top.
Hell yeah.
So the first thing that I would like to recommend today, I also recently found out that these are, like, there's a guy on TikTok that does, like, unboxings of these, which I think is weird, but also fun and cute, and I love it, and I'm not going to hate on him for it because they're worth it. They're called Calico Critters.
Okay.
And they're these... And this is one of the baby... I'm showing them to Kevin right now. I have two of them. They're little baby hedgehog twins. They're very fluffy and flocked. Yeah, you can look them up. Their website is, I think it's just calicocritters.com. Yeah, calicocritters.com. But there are these flocked little animals that have, like, cute little dresses and clothes, and they have, like, a little village, and, like, they're just, they're very cute, and they're very much, like, the things I like to collect, because I love collecting weird little shit.
Right. Do they have, like, cool packaging or something, where it's, like, you know those, like, mini brands that have the big ball, like...
No, they have mystery packs, but, like, their boxes...
Oh, okay, so you get to know what you're buying.
Came in is they just came in, like, a little box. They had, like, a little scooter with them that they were sitting on. And there are other ones, like, there are other little critters, like these guys that have, like, these little scooters, and then you can connect all the little scooters together, and they have, like, a little train. It's very cute. I don't have the other ones. I just have these two.
That's cool.
It's, like, their packaging is cute. And they give you... Also, on the bottom of these boxes, because all of these little critters have personalities.
Of course.
So, these ones don't have names. Usually they have names. So, like, they have personalities and names and stuff. And it's just very cute. And I love it. But there's a guy on TikTok who discovered them recently because they're at, like, Walmart and Barnes & Noble. Like, you find them in weird places. He found them recently and is, like, obsessed. Like, he started crying because they're so cute, and so now he just, like, gets them and unboxes them. And he got one from China recently, and he can't read the bottom of, like, what their names and personalities are, and he's, like, distressed. So he had to, like, try to find and Google it and be like, it's Mama Bear, and she's so cute.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, I don't remember his TikTok, otherwise I would also recommend him, but if you find him, you're welcome. But my main recommendation is for Calico Critters, because they're just so fucking cute.
Do you have any others, or is it just that one?
No. My second one is Brandon Sanderson, who is an author. He's fairly well known as a fantasy author, I think, at this point. If you like fantasy at all, if you've heard of or read The Wheel of Time, he helped finish out, I think, the last three or four books, because the main author, Robert Jordan, passed away before he was done with his 14-book series. But he left notes, thankfully, so I got to finish. And it's going to become a TV series on Amazon soon. But I'm currently reading The Mistborn Trilogy by Brandon Sanderson. It's really good. He has, like, unique magic systems. I'm begging him, please try to pass the Bechdel test at least once in one of your books. But otherwise, they're very good. I recommend also one of his other books called Elantris. That was his, like, first novel. It's very interesting. It's all, like, political intrigue and unique magic systems and... just, like, very, they're very good. And they're not political intrigue in the way that Game of Thrones is, where it's just like, they're all going to die. Someone's going to die. And it's all, hope ever. Nothing's good. But like the Mistborn trilogy specifically is a metal based magic system, which is really interesting. So like, they're called allomancers. That's what the magicians or the magic people are called. And you can burn different kinds of metals and you get different powers from that metal.
Rad. Do you have any other recommendations?
Cats, just like in general, cats are great. They're noisy. They're fun. I love them.
And of course, you need to end yours so I can begin mine with Gamer Corner.
Welcome to Gamer Corner!
Welcome to Gamer Corner! Let's get our Mountain Dew and Doritos! What games are you currently playing?
Oh, what game am I currently playing? I bought, as like a Christmas present to me, Hyrule Warriors, Age of Calamity.
Oh, okay.
I'm really into it. I wanted to get, what is it? The Phoenix game.
Phoenix
Rising.
Immortals Rising. It's basically
Immortals Rising. I wanted to get that one. Yeah, I wanted to get that one, but I decided to go with a new camera for streaming instead.
Rad. Anything else for Gamer Corner?
I'm still working on finishing Hades. I keep putting it off.
So good. Have you completed a full clear yet?
Nope. I made it to Styx, but I haven't completed Styx. Yeah.
You haven't? Okay.
Like, I kind of know how it, ends once you get past there, but I haven't gotten to it yet.
Yeah, so to get the credits, you have to beat it 10 times. And then after that, there's epilogue stuff to do. Mm-hmm. So, it really, I love you, Supergiant. The best game, the best developers in the game right now.
Oh, yeah.
Could go on about them forever.
Oh, also, I've been playing Horizon Zero Dawn. Sorry, I forgot to say that.
I just got PS Now, and that's part of it, and it's in my favorites list.
Good, play it. I think you'll like it, because you like open world games, right?
Yeah, but to go into my gamer corner and then my recommendation corner, currently, so I'm kind of stupid. I mean, we knew that, but so I played Spiritfarer, first of all. I could talk about that game forever, and I'm not going to. This is the only one I'm going to super explain, because it is probably was a late entry to my game of the year and probably disrupted Dragon Age Inquisition for the number 3 spot. Dragon Age is now 4, Spiritfarer is 3, Disco Elysium is 2, Hades is 1. So you play as a girl named Stella. This is not going to be any spoilers, but you play as a girl named Stella who just recently died, and then you meet Charon, and Charon's like, hey, I don't really want to do this anymore. You can run the boat. And Stella's like, huh? And she's like, yeah, it's your turn. I just, whatever. And she's like, okay, so you run a boat. You have to do Tetris to line up all these different buildings that you get for your boat as you get upgrades. You go around, you get spirits that are people who have died but are not ready to move on yet, and you help them complete tasks. It's all spirits of people that you knew and Stella knew in her life.
Was that a spoiler?
No. It's very obvious from the very beginning.
Okay.
Yeah, that's not a spoiler at all, because you know that. And you kind of help them decide what they need to do and finish their silly little tasks before they want to move on to whatever's beyond the Everdor. I cried. There's 11 characters. I cried at 8 of them out of the 11. Very touching, very, very good game about death and loss and what, that kind of means to different people and how letting go is a thing. It's just very good game. Super sweet. It's only about 20 hours in 2, so it's not a, super, super crazy in-depth game. I'm sure you could, I played 18. You could probably make it 20 if you completioned it, but loved it. Absolutely loved it. The dev team did a great job. But I'm stupid because I'm currently playing Phoenix Immortals Rising, Persona 5, and Nier Automata all at the same time. I got bored with one, so I'm like, I'm going to do the second one. And then I'm like, this one's fun, but I'm going to try something else. And then I played the third one, and all of them are super good. Persona 5 is 100 hours long.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Nier Automata is a great game, but it's 30 hours long. And me and Billy have been wanting to play it. And the third one was Phoenix Immortal Rising, which is basically
Breath of the Wild. It's Phoenix Immortals Rising and not Immortals Phoenix Rising.
Immortals Phoenix Rising. You were right.
Okay.
Immortals : Phoenix Rising. It's basically Greek myths, but Breath of the Wild. I basically started three really long games all at the same time, and I'm invested in all of them right now. So my actual recommendation corner, there's going to be not a whole lot of them, but they're going to be kind of rapid fire. I promise not to dwindle too long. My first one is Nathy Peluso. Nathy Peluso is an Argentinian singer-songwriter who gets fame. I've never listened to her music. She keeps going viral on Twitter because people keep quote tweeting her tweets and they're like, pass the stimulus, Nathy. It's so funny because they're like, because it's like Nancy Pelosi, but if you just and it's like, come on, Nathy Peluso. And like whenever you see it at first, you're like, wait, why is Nancy Pelosi tweeting? Oh, I just can't read. Nathy Peluso, follow her. She deserves it. Yeah, Nathy Peluso. My second one, Nora, this requires a little bit of with the audience. Do you all know who Azalea Banks is?
Oh, yeah.
So, Nora, what's your birthday? Month and day?
July 15th.
My new favorite thing, I need everyone to do this right now. Tweet at us. You need to Google your birth date and Azalea Banks after it. Because if there's this thing, basically, you can Google your birthday with Azalea Banks, and she did something that day. There's some article on it. July 15th, Azalea Banks cancels Fantasy 2 album after beefing with Nick Cannon. And also, July 15th, 2018, she would also said she would love to see Wendy Williams die on air. No matter what you do, whatever your birthday is, you can find something from Azalea Banks. Azalea, if you ever feel bad about yourself, just know that Azalea Banks has a publicist. The post, if you would like to know it, Nora, is album is canceled. I need some time to relax and bounce on dick. I'll release new music when I feel like it. And then the next post in her Instagram story was, OMG, can Wendy Williams have another stroke on TV and finally drop dead? I would love to see her die on air.
I remember that.
And then my Azalea Banks catastrophe, birthday catastrophe.
You had to say your birthday because I said mine.
January 22nd. There's three of them. I'm not going to read all of them, just the headlines. Azalea Banks said she was treated like an animal at the airport. Azalea Banks slams Oompa Loompa looking Irish woman on Instagram. And Azalea Banks on White Privilege 2. I don't need, nor do I want, Macklemore to speak for me. It's just so stupid.
What did Macklemore do to you?
I don't know. But she went on a whole tirade about Macklemore. She called an Irish woman. She said that there was an Oompa Loompa Irish woman from an incident on board from an Aer Lingus flight from London to Dublin. And she apparently was also treated like an animal. Happy birthday, Kevin. Azalea Banks catastrophe. Please tweet at me. Like, please tweet them at me because they're so funny. Also, other recommendations. Evermore, obviously. Still loving it. Great album. Love Taylor Swift. And also Therapy. Just go to Therapy. So yeah, Nathy Peluso. Pass the stimulus, you dumb bitch. Like, it's so funny every time. Because it gets me every time.
I feel like you owe her at least a couple streams of her music for this.
I'm going to eventually because she makes me laugh so much. I need to at least follow her. Anyways, goodbye. Nora.
Yeah.
Yeah. You good? Did the Borgias really wear you out over there? So, Nora.
Kevin.
You.
So I want to do some digging into these Duggars.
Oh, I hated that.
I didn't have anything good to end the Borgias with, so I have to start the Duggars strong.
So basically, okay. You had your fancy Italian, not Italian, but Italian, family full of power and big old family and secrets, right? So take that, make them not Catholic, but part of a cult. And okay. Still probably the same amount of internal. Yeah. And that's what you have the Duggars. So before I get started, tell me what you know about the Duggars. I want to see what your like perception is of them.
I know it's like the 19 Kids and Counting, which I just could not imagine being almost in my 20s and then my mom popping out another baby.
Funny you say that.
19 Kids and Counting, family planning, and just awful. Just like the worst parts of Christian culture you could ram into a family of white people.
And criminal son. And then give
them popularity.
Yep. So, we're going to first start off with just
Sorry, one last thing. I also know that there was allegations of rape of one of the older brothers and to the sisters.
Correct. The Duggars. What a happy, fun Partridge Family we got going on. So just to kind of a summary, they have been in the following TV shows. Let's start there.
Oh gosh.
So I'm saying my source here specifically because of the source. So fandom is like a Wikipedia page. Basically, you can make a wiki for any TV show, video game, whatever, and it's like a collaborative way, you know, to make like a wiki for it. I am on fundamentalists.fandom.com. So fandom is a very common wiki site, like probably the most common wiki site to make, you know, wiki sites for video games or TV shows or books, universes. This wiki site is specifically for fundamentalist Christian families. They primarily focus on mega families, including many members of the Institute in Basic Life Principles, which I will discuss. So the Duggars, big ass family. They have been included in the TV shows and how they got their fame. First thing they were on was on September 6, 2004. There is a TV show special on Discovery Health called 14 Children and Pregnant Again. It introduced TV viewers to the Duggar family and their 14 children. They showcased things like homeschooling, bulk shopping, the buddy systems, and then the special ended with the birth of their 15th child, Jackson. In 2006 and 2007, they aired three more specials on Discovery Health and TLC. They included like a major vacation in the Western United States and then building their family house and then the births of Joanna and Jennifer. So then in 2008, the famous TV show 17 Kids and Counting was a show on TLC reality show based on the lives of the Duggars. This show went on for 10 seasons. So this show was canceled in 2015. So from 2008 to 2015, these people were like the Kardashians. Everything they did was documented because they're on a TLC show. And it's like, when you're famous and your entire life is being famous, sure. But these are just normal people. I mean, normal. They don't, you know, they weren't rich or anything. Like, these are just normal people. So, like, that's crazy. The show title kept counting up the name. So we went from 17 Kids and Counting, and then it changed to 18 Kids and Counting, and now we're up to 19 Kids and Counting in 2015. It covered a bunch of big family events, like the weddings of Josh, Jill, and Jessa, the births of Jordan, Josie, Mackenzie, Michael, Marcus, and Israel. And then in 2015, they made a three-part series called Jill and Jessa, Counting On. They started with the adult Duggar children and the in-laws discussing the reaction to the two scandals, which we will talk about, and how that shifted the family to move on. And this was through the lens of Jill and Jessa, who were the two Duggar daughters who were married at that time. The show changed its title then to Counting On, as its focus kind of expanded on more of the adult Duggars. And it's currently in the seventh season, and as far as I believe, is still going. So the parents are named Jim Bob and Michelle. They have 9 daughters and 10 sons, and all of them have J names. Would you like to guess any of the names? Survey says... you lost, sorry. That was my family feud. Their names are as follows. Josh, Jaina, John, David, Jill, Jessa, Jinger, Joseph, Josiah, Joanna, Jebediah, Jeremiah, Jason, James, Justin, Jacksana, Joanna, Jennifer, Jordan, Grace, Josie. So, slower... Josh, I believe this is in order of age. Josh, Jaina, John, David, Jill, Jessa, Jinger, Joseph, Josiah, Joyanna, Jedediah, Jeremiah, Jason, James, Justin, Jackson, Johanna, Jennifer, Jordan, Grace, and Josie. So, obviously, from what we know, super Christian, super conservative, super strange. So let's go into their background. So they're from Tonnetown, Arkansas. They got their start on, you know, like I said, random TLC specials that were mostly focused on like her last five births, building their house, you know, just a bunch of four, because they literally had 14 and then the 15th was born during that. And they had 16th. I think they had a special about the 16th kid. They had one about the house getting built, and then they started 17 kids and counting. And that was their full main time TV. Jim, Bob, and Michelle met in the early 1980s. They were 16 and 17, I believe. Jim, Bob, they met in the early 1980s. Michelle got invited to Jim, Bob's church by a friend and went through a, Wikipedia described it as a religious conversion. This was in the early 1980s. The Duggars were then married on July 21st, 1984. She had just graduated high school. He was 19. She was 17. So, like, a one-year age difference isn't weird, but, like, she's a minor and just graduated high school. Like, ew. So, they got married. They just graduated high school. They started off launching a used car business. And then, when that didn't work out, they ran a towing business, like the narcs they are. And then when that didn't work out, they went into real estate, and they both have their real estate license.
If they're doing this, was this in the 90s?
No, this would actually be in the 80s because this was all before their child was born in 88.
Between 4 years, they failed at used cars, they failed at towing, and then they decided real estate. They just got higher and higher risk, it seems like.
Yes, they just kept going up. So in the sex life and just family planning life, they chose to wait to have kids and used birth control. Yeah, this sentence that I just said, choosing to wait to have kids and we're using birth control, is their Joker origin story. This sentence alone.
Oh my God.
Because they had Joshua. I couldn't find out if they were off birth control or not when they had Joshua, but they did have Joshua in 1988. They went on birth control again, which it sounded like she was taking birth control pills, mm-hmm. and then got pregnant again while on birth control and miscarried. They named the child Caleb. But instead of dealing with this in a, you know, healthy grieving way, they decided, let's become fundamentalists. Because this experience, they went to a doctor and said, hey, I'm on birth control. Why did I get pregnant? And then why did I, you know? And the doctor said, you know, I don't know how true this was in the 80s. Now, this is extremely rare if not true. I don't know how valid this is. But the doctor said, well, some birth controls can allow contraception and then also cause miscarriage. So then they handled this in a very normal way and decided that, you're right, doctor, God will decide the amount of kids I have. And that number was 19.
So she got married when she was 17.
Yep.
And her first kid was 4 years later, 21.
My next bullet point was that there was one birth on the average of every 15 months. And it gets worse because we're going to go into their beliefs and how they raised their family before we actually go into, you know, the events of the show, conspiracy theories, etc. So this is not even, we're going to get into the culty stuff after this. This is just what this specific family believed and how they raised their family. We're going to talk about their cult-like behavior and everything after that. But this is just kind of an overview of their specific beliefs. They call themselves Independent Baptists, which I don't know a lot about, you know, all the different branches of Christianity because, Jesus Christ. Oh, I didn't
Stop
mean to do that.
At your own joke.
Oh, my mind. So according, I just looked up like the Wikipedia really quick. I don't know a lot about Baptist. However, from what I do know, Southern Baptists, from kind of the few exposures I've had, are the ones that like throw themselves to the ground and like shake during prayers and like they're like, you know, scream during church and they're like, let the demons leave from you, like those kind of stuff. Like that's kind of what I've gotten from it. I'm sure that not all Baptists are like that, and they call themselves Independent Baptists. So like, don't like that. They filter their TV and their internet. Obviously, they can only have family appropriate programming on their TV. They filter and monitor all of their internet, you know, like normal, well-adjusted parents do.
I can understand some monitoring because you don't want, you know, you don't want your youngins to get into stuff that they shouldn't before they should.
They must have modesty in their clothing, as you probably could have guessed.
Yep.
They can't have shorts or tank tops. Women are not allowed to have skirts above the knee. If you bar one's thigh, that is nakedness and shame, and it defrauds others and stirs up desires in others that cannot be fulfilled.
There's a lot to unpack there. Do they let, I doubt, but are men allowed to like be shirtless, like if they're doing yard work or whatever?
My guess is no. I believe no, because Ginger Duggar's, this article from Inquisitor, says Ginger Duggar's boyfriend and Jill Duggar's husband are raising eyebrows by engaging behavior that some have labeled downright defrauding, which is the second time that word's been used, and I don't really get it or why. But Ginger Duggar is currently courting Jeremy Vuolo, who is a former pro soccer player. You're a former pro soccer player. You can get someone better. And, like, I'm sure Ginger is fine, but, like, you can definitely not be involved in the family. Like, you could either A, date someone who's not part of a cult, or B, save her if she's old enough. Ginger first announced that they were courting. As Christianity Today reports, my very, you know, valid news source, Christianity Today. Mm-hmm. Jeremy had previously confessed to getting in trouble with the police and being part of the college party scene.
Of course, Duggar, he was a soccer player.
Yeah, a pro soccer player. A Duggar has never left home to go to a college where there are parties with alcohol. So Jeremy's past probably likely shocked many longtime fans of Ginger's family. In this photo, Jeremy is shirtless and wearing what appears to be two women's necklaces around his face and neck. And this was something they were really mad about and has come back to haunt him. That's it. It's just a picture of him shirtless from like his belly button up. And he has like, it looks like he took someone's like necklace and put it on. And was like, haha. And then put it on his head because it looked funny. That's it. But this was, it caused a huge rift. So one, it was taken by one of his former New York Bulls teammates. And this was posted back in 2012. And someone said, do I lose respect for at Jeremy Vuolo or just accept him for who he is? Hashtag dilemma. Well, apparently, someone found it and posted it, and it caused major problems. And Ginger Duggar's mother, Michelle, has explained that her family frowns upon showing as much skin as Jeremy is revealing in the photo above because doing so can defraud other people. So that was actually a very good question that related. This whole tangent, well, you might have to come out some of the other bits. This whole tangent had a good point. And another apparently thing that happened in 2016 was that Jill Duggar's husband, Derek Dillard, tweeted a Bible verse that pickles and hairspray deemed rated R. Derek Dillard, which is Jill's husband, tweeted, "Happy Tuesday, Proverbs 5, 18 through 19, and have a great day." Proverbs 18 through 19 reads, and I haven't read this yet, "Let thy fountain be blessed, and rejoice with the wife of thy youth. Let her be as the loving hind and pleasant roe. Let her breast satisfy thee at all times, and thou ravish always with her love." Hell yeah, Derek! Hell yeah. Basically, for explanation, a man's wife will bear many children, and she will be a blessing and comfort to thee, as it follows, and not a curse and a snare as a harlot will be. It's also saying that a man should only satisfy himself with a wife, even when she's old. So, like, basically, like, good sentiment, like, love your wife always, don't cheat on your wife, and your wife is not a, you know, like a hindrance. But apparently, a Pickles and Hairspray commenter dubbed it Bible porn. I think Pickles and Hairspray is like a pro Duggar fan page.
That's what I'm picking up.
That was a good tangent because that explained a lot. So, obviously, they avoid peaches in public swimming areas because it's too hard for guys to keep their eyes averted. Men have to shave and keep their hair short, clean shaven all the time, keep their hair short and tidy. Women have to keep their hair long. Yeah, I know you asked me earlier, can they shave their armpits and legs? So this is just from a Reddit thread. This is posted in 2010. Someone said, "I just got to know, I was in the bathroom getting myself squeaky clean and coconutty smelling. As I reached for my razor, I found myself wondering, are the Fundy girls allowed to shave? The Duggar's girls, the Bates girls, the Botkins girls?" Someone responded, "This is no way an expert opinion. This is literally just a forum. I'm pretty sure it's left up to daddy when they are SHD. I don't know what that means. To me, it sounds like puberty.
Yeah.
Pretty sure it's left up to daddy when they're SHD and then up to their husbands once married. So basically it all depends on opinions and what is more feminine and preferences of men in their collective lives." Nice, huh? So they follow chaperone courtship, which means they cannot date without permission. An interested man must speak to the woman's father. The parents have to chaperone dates until they deem that it's approved and they can start going on dates without them. But even then, they still like don't because they're so far into the like cult mentality. According to today.com, here is the seven rules of courtship for the Duggars. Rule number one is courting is not dating. It's dating with a purpose. Courtship has the end goal of marriage. Rule number two, 3 or 4 or 15 is not a crowd. There's always a chaperone. The daughters are committed to always having a chaperone with them. Like, can you imagine you're on a date in the Olive Garden and my parents and like three of my siblings are sitting at the table directly next to us and the dad's just staring. Rule number three is brothers know best. All the Duggar boys have been chaperones to Ben and Jessa. Even the younger ones who will go along with them to a coffee shop or out to dinner. Rule number four, texting. Your parents are watching, for real. Since Ben lives about 4 hours away from the Duggars, he asked if he could text Jessa. The Duggars agreed, but only if Jim, Bob, and Michelle were included on every text. So the only time that Ben was allowed to text his girlfriend, I believe, at this time, like when they were courting, was in the family group chat. To make it even better, rule number five is no kissing or handholding. They set their own boundaries on the physical side. So the Duggar parents asked their daughters and their boyfriends, this is the daughters, by the way. I don't know if this applies to the sons, because everything I've read has only applied to the daughters. But set their own boundaries on the physical side, share those boundaries with them. In Jessa and Ben's case, the couple decided to give each other hugs when they are greeting and saying goodbye or posing for a picture. But they have committed to waiting for the first kiss till marriage. They also wait until they're engaged before they hold hands. So apparently
they're bad kissers,
right? Imagine that kiss at the wedding. Like, they missed. They had to have missed. Number six is to court a Duggar girl, you have to go through dad, of course. When the four oldest daughters, Jana, Jill, Jessa, and Jinger, wrote the book Growing Up Duggar, it's all about relationships, which, like, it really is. The parents are like horny, obviously, because they have 19 kids, but like, to be involved, like, they want to like be involved so bad. Like, they're so obsessed with their kids' relationships, it's to the point where it's creepy. To make you feel a little better, rule number seven is that you can't fail at courtship. Ultimately, the goal of courting is to find out if you're compatible with the other person. It's about getting to know someone, Jim Bob says. Nora wants to kill me, but not me. So this isn't really their beliefs, but this is just kind of another fun fact. Before we get into like the culty behavior, which I don't think is going to be as much because a lot of our conversation we just talked about was a lot of it, I just want to go over the official tenets of their cult, what the IBLP believes. But before that, when they made their house, you know, the one special they had about like building for 15 or whatever it was called, they ordered, I don't know why this is important, but they bought, it actually becomes important a little later, maybe, conspiracy theory. They bought land and they bought two steel frames, you know, for the house. I don't know how house building works, but whatever. But then they got there and then realized it wasn't enough. So then they bought another steel frame, and that side of the house was the girl's side of the house. And also where like the kitchen and stuff was. And this sounds like a moot point, but you'll understand in a bit why that having the girl's side of the house be the add-on is maybe important. What's best though, is that these motherfuckers didn't even have to pay for it. They bought the frames. Discovery said, hey, I want to make another TV show out of you because people eat up your fundamentalist huge amount of family bullshit. Look how wholesome you are. So they got construction workers in Arkansas to donate their time and their labor and make it a special called, it was called 16 Children and Moving In, 7,000 square feet, custom family that Discover paid for, listed in 2019 for $1.8 million. So, you know, it's probably worth even more when they built it because depreciation. It looks like it's weird because it's a big rectangle. Like, it's not even, for being 7,000 square feet, it's not a nice house. No, it's literally what you would make on The Sims. It's one long rectangle, and then you have one long roof piece along the entire rectangle. You have a couple epaulets coming out, like five windows. And then that side, there's just a porch along one of the long sides of it. And that's it. It doesn't wrap around. It doesn't even look like it's an elevated porch. It's literally just like an overhang roof with columns. And that house is worth $1.8 million. It's the floor plan's weird, and that's part of a conspiracy theory. So we're going to talk about now the official tenets of the IBLP. The IBLP is the Institute of Basic Life Principles. It is called IBLP/ATI because there's also a homeschooling arm of it that's called the Advanced Training Institute. It's an independent fundamentalist. There's a lot of adjectives here. Independent, fundamentalist, Baptist, religious, organization promulgates strict rules and until recently was run with one man at the center. So this is a basically TLDR slash FAQ posted on r-duggersnark. It is a subreddit specifically dedicated to dunking on the Duggers. However, there's a, I'm not going to say this is the end all be all, but they did have a lot. They do have a lot of links and sources, and you can click on the links and it brings up to their websites. So while it's probably, you know, I will recognize bias. However, all of, there is a lot of resources and claims and a lot of linked stuff where you can see exactly what they're talking about. So while it is on a biased website, most likely it's pretty accurate. So it was founded by Bill Gothard in 1961. He changed the name from the IBYC, which is the Institute in Basic Youth Conflicts, and then again to the Institute in Basic Life Principles in 1989. So it started as the IBLP, and then changed it to the IBYC, and then back to the IBLP. So there's a bunch of biblical principles they go by, including moral purity, suffering, ownership, clear conscience, authority, design, life calling. He brought together 49 character qualities he expected from his followers, some of which include, let's see, I'm just going to do roulette here. Justice versus fairness, enthusiasms versus apathy, faith versus presumption. A lot of culty, looks good on the surface, but the more you think about it, ew.
No, the 10 unchangeables looks fucking culty. So
the 10 unchangeables is a manifest, basically, of, so you click on it and it has this whole manifesto written by Bill Gothard himself. And it's like a direct link to it. And it says, if you took a poll on whether people are satisfied with the way God designed them, you'd get a resounding no. It wouldn't matter who you asked. Even the beautiful people would probably be screaming no the loudest. Bill Gothard, I hate you so much, but I agree. I'm mentally ill, you know? Like, I get it. Bill Gothard, 1 point in the good column. One. It seems so, but this is what the cult leaders do. They say things like, that's how fascists or people who don't have your best interest at heart do this, is they take their extreme beliefs and morph their words into being a good speaker. But to the unchangeables, basically quotes a bunch of Bible verses, goes on and on and on. Basically, there are 10 things we can't change. Physical features, our parents, our siblings, which like, sure, fine, whatever. Race and nationality. And nationality, I mean, literally move to a different country. Mental capacity, which is a little, maybe I understand where you're going, maybe, where he says, like, we train ourselves to be as smart as we can be. At some point, maybe, sure, like, everyone's brains tops out, but, like, most likely you can get smarter in different ways. Like, that's not your time in history. Okay, got that one. Gender, hello? Birth order, aging, and death. So he got 9.5, I guess. No, mental capacity, nationality, I'll give him a half. Gender, so he got like 7.5. Physical features, shit. Bitch, I'll go get plastic surgery. Fuck you. He got 6.5. Pre-birth training. This is basically, if you want to insert this before I start, welcome to the IBLP training manual. Today, we're all going to be members of a cult. Come along, won't you? He teaches that unborn human beings can comprehend scripture while they're in the uterus. He also believes satanic forces, which according to him, include Cabbage Patch dolls. And when you click on the link that they highlighted, there is a call to discernment written by Bill Gothard, specifically talking about Cabbage Patch dolls. He also claims to refuse that children will refuse to emerge from the womb if such demonic forces, such as Cabbage Patch dolls, are present in the room while the woman is laboring. So don't give birth to your Cabbage Patch dolls. Homeschooling and higher education. Your parents have to homeschool everything. Formal education is a trap from Satan. Doctors need not go to medical school. You cannot listen to any type of music, even contemporary Christian music. Anything with a beat is considered satanic. You may only listen to classical music and hymns. So obviously, marital abstinence, don't need to explain that one, y'all know. Inherited and genetic sin. You genetically inherit the sin of your ancestors.
Wait, no, I think you need to go back to marital abstinence because I just looked at this.
Oh, I thought it was just marital abstinence. May not have sexual intercourse during a women's menstrual cycle or for 7 days after, on a Saturday night, or for 40 days after the birth of a son, or for 80 days after the birth of a daughter.
What the fuck? What the fuck else are Saturday nights for?
Apparently not sex.
Oh, God. I also just read the second, or the one underneath that.
Yeah, you genetically inherit the sinfulness of your ancestors, you know.
Under IBLP, you can't adopt a child.
Fun, right? So then you go to the next topic, female submission, umbrella of authority. This is what the Duggars follow, if you guys haven't figured that out yet. You must be subservient to your husbands, obey them, you know, normal cult shit. You have to obey your parents unquestioningly. You encourage the parents to train their children like dogs. You encourage corporeal punishment. Even said beating should not stop.
Corporal
punishment. You said beating should not stop until children have learned to accept them silently. They also teach that women and children must always and instantly obey their headships.
Which many followers have reported keeps women and children in a constant state of fear.
How do you think cults happen? Most cults keep women and children in a constant state of fear. Marriages must be arranged by the fathers, you know, Duggar shit. Couples must maintain total sexual chastity before marrying. They cannot even hold hands until they're engaged. Kissing before marriage is verboten. Governmental authority is God-given. And then, obviously, who do you think was the God-given authority? Mr. Gothard himself. The leader of the cult said, yes, authority is God-given, but guess who gave that? Guess who God gave the authority? Me, bitch. Oh, birth control. Obviously, you know, birth control. You should have many children as possible. STIs are punishment for sexual immortality. Birth control is a curse. You promote home births. You question the wisdom of hospital births, who are obviously done by doctors who can't go to medical school. And they're bad because male medical teams are present and they might involve medical interventions and they might encourage birth control as you're giving birth. Like, can you imagine you're giving birth and a doctor's like, hey, you want some Sprintec? Like, what the fuck? He's so delusional.
He insinuates that women are more likely to die while giving birth at the hospital than they are in labor at home with a midwife. That is factually false.
Yep. And this is what the Duggars believe. This is the cult that the Duggars are on. So if anyone has ever listened to the Duggars and was like, wow, they're cute and fun. He encourages people to have children they can't afford. He claims that childbirth and pregnancy cure cancer and should ignore advice from doctors and midwives to stop having children. So if doctors say, hey, stop having children, he says, no, ignore them. So yeah, guys, I'm not even going to go into some of the other topics, but those are the mild ones. There's some that are seriously triggering in this. And that is what the Duggars follow. But these people are famous and had a house for free, have all of these kids, have TV shows based on this information. And I love learning about them because they're just so, like, fucked up. Moral of the story, no matter how much she kept in, because, like, I really encourage you all to read it, and, like, it's really fucked up. You know, just the other stuff is just some weird, like, weird ass beliefs. It's we're back to being fun and cool and hip and sexy now, but like we're both on the verge of tears by how pissed off we were based on the actual doctrine of the IBLP ATI. That's what they believe. So now I want to go through just a couple of real quick. Their controversies and conspiracy theories. This is where the scandals start. This is the trigger warning area because one of the scandals, I'll just say that first. So this is trigger warning, skip for like 30 seconds. You know, if you don't want to talk about like sexual allegations. So there was the biggest scandal. Like this is the thing that canceled the Duggars and, you know, made it so the TV show got canceled. There was old police documents that surfaced. When Josh was 14 or 15, he groped four of his sisters and one non-related underage girl while they slept. He confessed this to the parents. He also engaged the behavior more than once, even after the confession. They sent him to a Christian-based counseling program. In addition to going to the police. So the Duggars did take him to the police, which I was like surprised by. And I was like, that's, you know, like a good thing, but also like, ugh. Like they sent him to, no, it's okay. Cops don't do anything. He was investigated for a number of sexual offenses, including forcible fondling of breasts and genitals. That is, as far as we know, the farthest it went. So like, thankfully that's the farthest it went. That's kind of the end of the trigger warning area where you would talk about what actually happened. Jim Bob told Megyn Kelly that we did the best we could under the circumstances. He was still juvenile. It wasn't an adult. Trigger warning again, actually. Quote from Jim Bob, this was not rape or anything like that. This was someone touching over their clothes. Jim Bob? Can we look at legal definitions, Jim Bob? Jim Bob? Jim Bob? What the fuck? He resigned from his position as a lobbyist with the Family Research Council. He released a statement saying, 12 years ago, I acted inexcusably, for which I'm extremely sorry and deeply regret. I hurt others, including my family and close friends, which he did this through the Facebook page.
No, it's like posting a notes on Twitter.
Yeah, he invented the notes apology. We spoke with the authorities where I confessed my wrongdoings. My parents arranged for me and those affected by my actions to receive counseling. I understood if I continued down this wrong road, I would end up ruining my life. Two of his victims, his sisters, Jill and Jessa, also spoke about what happened to them when they were 12 and 10. Both she and Jill explained they felt re-victimized by the police reports being leaked and the story appearing in tabloids 12 years later after inappropriate touching happened. Sad overall. Sad that, like, I'm not going to tell the victims how to feel, but also when you're in that, you know, situation and you're kind of like, I don't know if groomed is the right word, but conditioned to believe it was, like, okay, that, like, you know, I'm not going to invalidate what you feel as a victim, but also at the same time, like, you've been conditioned to feel that way. So just real gross. So scandal number two, same guy. This one's not as bad. It's just kind of funny because, like, of course.
This is the oldest brother too, right?
Well, Josh, this is number one. A couple months later, do you remember the app Ashley Madison? Do you remember that scandal?
Oops. I remember the app.
Oops. So, this one's just funny. So basically someone, this was through a big thing. Basically a guy had hacked into Ashley Madison, which is a dating app specifically for extramarital affairs. And so a guy hacked into Ashley Madison and said, you're going to pay me a bunch of money or I'm going to release all the names of your users. Ashley Madison said, no, fuck you, you won't. And the guy said, okay, and released users. It was a huge scandal. Like, people, you could find the list online. People were finding out their husbands were cheating on them, which, like, hell yeah. People were finding out their wives were cheating on them. I don't remember how many famous people were affected, which, like, don't be famous and also be a bad person. Josh was on there. He was a paying member of Ashley Madison, but he had spent nearly $1,000 on two separate accounts between February 2013 and May 2015. He released another notes apology. It said, I have been the biggest hypocrite ever. While espousing faith and family values, I've secretly over the last several years been viewing pornography on the internet, and this secret became a secret addiction. I became unfaithful to my wife. So he was cheating on his wife. Those are some of the biggest scandals. Now, last but not least, we have a couple conspiracy theories. I would like to show you the floor plan of their house because it's just weird. So you'll notice it's a one big rectangle. First of all, the goodbye room. Jim Bob's office right there. They have the commercial size kitchen, pantry storage, pretty kitchen and breakfast bar, living room, playroom, laundry, clothes room. Just weird. Like, the setup is so weird. To get to the guest suite, you have to go through the laundry room and then into the guest suite. And there's a sewing room. So upstairs, you go upstairs, it goes to a catwalk. To the right, you have a loft, which leads into the boys' room with two bathrooms, a closet, a studio, and storage. And then to the left, you have a mechanical room, which maybe that's where the water heater is, Nora. Michelle's office, a prayer room, which, like, valid, whatever. You have a super weirdly shaped master suite. Why is it shaped like that? Like, I don't get it. It's like a diagonal. You have the loft, mechanical. So then you have the girls' room. The prayer room is also just a little tiny baby rectangle, like, in between the master suite and the girls' room. I don't know. It can fit like two people in there, maybe. Then you have the girls' room, which is massive. The boys' room also, if you notice, there's just a big chunk taken out of the corner.
Yeah.
There's no label. What's in that chunk? And it's like that on all the other ones. The trigger warning-y conspiracy theory part, which I'm not going to mention the stuff again, but, like, this is a theory and kind of makes sense about why the house... It's a weird layout. Like, you can agree to that, especially the upstairs, the catwalk.
Yeah.
So people have theorized basically that, and this is a very common theory, is that the parents knew that there was possible, you know, what Jim, the oldest Duggar, did.
Mm-hmm.
Because Josh. Basically that the parents knew about it, or they wanted to protect against it in a family this large. So they designed the house in a super bonkers way to that if one of the boys would want to go over to one of the girls' room, they would have to go over this catwalk, which would be louder than the rest of the floors, because you think when you step on a catwalk, it's going to be loud because it's hollow underneath, and have to walk past the parents' room. And that they would basically the way that like their bed was and stuff would be able to see into the hallway. So they'd be able to see if that's happening. And it's, people are theorizing that it's designed as a safeguard against that. When you think back to the beach, men can't help themselves. Men can't do this. Men can't avert their eyes. And so instead of, you know, trying to teach your children not to do that, people are theorizing that they built this house in this super, super fucked up way. It's going to help prevent just explicit things from happening if they put the boys over on the other side of the catwalk. Michelle and Bob are so stupid and like think, have these such fucked up views of men and women and men's impulses and women, you know, just gross stuff, that they think that just a catwalk and like doing this would stop it. Because this house plan makes no sense at all. So it's just a super like gross thing. And like, also, and something else people are pointing out, even if you don't want to include the part about the catwalk, but like people are saying like, it doesn't make sense because they have little kids all the time. Why would you have a catwalk? And also their kids don't have enough beds or space. So why does Michelle get an office when she doesn't fucking do anything? B, why do you have this big ass catwalk when you could just put more rooms there or make the boys' room bigger or the master suite bigger? But instead, it seems like they designed this whole thing around this catwalk. And I don't even think it has to do with like Josh specifically. I really think like my personal take is that they might just be like their IBLP, QRSTUV, whatever theories of like the way that men behave, of like there needs to be safeguards. Even if the Josh thing never happened, it would not surprise me to think that like these crazy people think that we have to put in safeguards to protect them because boys will be boys. It wastes so much space. Like this whole area right here, literally this whole area where like this catwalk is the size of the entire boys' rooms, loft, studio, two bathrooms, storage. I just don't get it. I just don't get it. And I hate them so much. It's just so weird. And like the cognitive dissonance these people have to do all of this. So yeah, that is the Duggars. Wow. I'd like to thank you all for listening to this. I know it's definitely a beefy topic on both sides. A lot of stuff distressing for us because we recorded for a long time. So if you're going to look up these crazy ass people, first of all, the Duggars are not cool. They were never cool. If you're going to look up these crazy ass people, just be warned, you're going to want to punch your screen. Like it turned in from us making fun of the Duggars to getting serious. That's the useless promise. Come in thinking it's going to be useless. Come out radicalized. Oh, one more thing that Nora, you have to include. I'm forcing you to include.
Okay.
Whenever you want. I just got involved in a Bachelor fantasy league, and I know nothing about The Bachelor. If anyone is listening to this and would like to let me know, so like we're in advanced mode and I don't really know what that means. Anyone has any advice for my Bachelor? I want to win the pot.
But if you want to reach us, if you want to tell us anything, say anything, give us reviews, give us suggestions, you can reach us at useless, or yeah, even corrections. You can reach us on Twitter at useless_podcast. And then you can reach us also through Gmail, which is at useless_thepodcast@gmail.
The best thing you guys can do if you like us, share us with your friends. I don't know why you would like us, but you know, there's something about us, maybe. Share us with your friends is probably the best way to help spread the word. Follow us on Twitter, like she said. Also, leaving us a 5-star review on iTunes. Even if you don't use iTunes, you can go into the podcast app, totally free. Most of them are already pre-downloaded on your phones. And I'm very excited to see how this turns out because this is a doozy of an episode.
Stay useless.
As always, stay useless. We have one listener in Lithuania. Thank you so much. You're our first international listener, Lithuanianer. I didn't mean to lisp, I just kept saying Lithuania, so then I said listener. Nora, you're allowed to jump in at any time and save my ass.
I'm not going to.
To the one listener in Lithuania, I love you. Please keep listening. You're great, fun, cool, amazing.
It's very hot and sexy of you.
I just want to celebrate you, okay? I want to know who you are because we have one listener in Lithuania, so I feel like you should be celebrated, okay?
Yeah.
Just send us an email. I want to shout you out as our first international listener. You're great.